the broadband stuff and didn't really mention Macomb. It was addressed to us, but it was weird because they wanted you to go to places like Peoria or the Quad Cities or Galesburg, places where I'm sure the high speed is. And I suspect eventually it'll be here. It's just that it isn't yet.
That was some interesting tech news that I found. And get ready for IDs, Daryl.
Okay.
As a lot of people know, this area does have a tendency to be behind on communications things. Well, I had seen in the Macomb Journal that they always kind of tell you what's going on at the city council meetings. And, you know, unless it's a closed door session, it's open for public information and people will report it. And they'd mentioned that the town was leasing space on the water towers to a place called ComNet, ComNet Data or ComNet Telecommunications or something. And I was like, well, who's that? I looked it up, and they are providing GSM service in rural parts of America. Right now, it's pretty much just Illinois and I think Colorado. They're offering GSM. And I'm like, ooh, because there are several companies that we've always thought would be cool to be here because either their pricing structure was cool or the plans or just something we liked about them. And they were, their companies were doing GSM. Well, now at least it'll be possible because they're going to be having full GSM here soon.
That'll be cool. Yeah. Let's do some IDs.
106.3 FM.
WGND.
LP McComb. The Voice. You're listening to the Wolfie Satellite Radio Network.
Laugh it up, fuzzball.
Moo. I love that thing.
Yep.
Anyway, we're back. It is now the
fourth
hour of Inverness. No.
Yeah, 21st of April 2006.
It is indeed.
Pretty hard to believe that we've gotten that far into the year already.
Almost impossible to believe, but still,
mm-hmm.
it won't be very much longer before we will have lived in this town for more than 21 years.
That's right.
Is that possible?
Apparently.
Wow.
It can happen. In fact, we'll have lived at this address that long.
That's true. Well, we didn't live anywhere else in this town.
We didn't live anywhere else. So we're already the longest we've ever been anywhere in our lives.
Yeah.
In any one place.
Come here, baby.
And,
come here. Come on.
Anyway. Trying to think what, to mention, but Daryl's apparently finding Kitty.
Well, he had decided he wanted to go exploring, and I just assumed he wouldn't if I can avoid it for a while.
Uh-huh.
And he doesn't seem to mind me holding him.
True.
But then again, I'm not by a microphone, so...
That's true, you're not by a microphone.
I am by a kitty.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, the kitty's by me.
That's true.
He's cute.
I don't know if I pointed it out, but I haven't checked to see if they're available through the website, but that international...
Pancake House?
You know, international... what do they call it? Internet appliance, or whatever it's called. The personal internet appliance that is being promoted by... the head of AMD, where they want to have internet in 50% of the world by 2015, and this was one of their ways of helping to get that possible. that they wanted to rent these things through local ISPs and phone companies around the world where people might not be able to afford regular computers. It uses Windows CE, as we discovered a few weeks ago.
Yeah.
Anyway, it's Radio Shack was selling them, and apparently they've called them back. I'm assuming they're not selling them anymore. I don't know if there's any left over on their website or not. Probably not, but it's possible. But
well, I just found out one thing. He's not going to be a shoulder kitty that, like Abby was.
Uh-huh.
I put him around my shoulders and he said, "No, I don't think so. I'm leaving."
Uh-huh.
Sorry, didn't mean to interrupt you.
That's all right. Anyway, so I don't know what's happening. They were, to my knowledge, the only place to really get those things in the U.S. So I don't know if somebody else will pick it up or if they'll ever if they will bother. Obviously, it was just kind of interesting that they were available for a while, from about, I guess, a little ways before Christmas till, I think, the end of last month or beginning of last month, maybe it was, because sometime around March there was a bunch of rebates on them. It seemed to me that they were overcharging for them. They were pretty expensive. You could actually get a computer for a few dollars more than one of these things without the rebates. And I think that would be the big problem, is they're going to be hard to be competitive. But I had the impression that they were supposed to sell, in effect, worldwide for closer to the price with the rebates, which would make them a little more reasonable. So I don't know what happened, what the deal is. I was sort of interested in checking it out. I would like to have something with a little more stability than regular Windows, and apparently the Windows CE has been pretty reliable, and the people who were doing testing on these things or that evaluated them seemed to like them. They seemed pretty stable and stuff. But, oh well, just never got the chance. So,
anyway, I think we were telling you that we decided to call the kitty Rusty.
Right. Because of his basic color scheme.
Right. And the weird thing was that when we first got him, when we first brought him into the house, he actually came to his name.
Yeah, that was weird. Don't know what's... I mean, it's possible that somebody else had named him that. You never know. But he seemed to come more to that than he did Kitty Kitty.
Oh, he totally ignores Kitty Kitty. He's absolutely... Kitty Kitty doesn't mean a thing to him. He said, "Well, what are you doing? You're not talking to me, are you?" But Rusty, he at least looks up at you.
Yeah.
Doesn't necessarily mean he's going to come.
No,
to
he's
you,
a cat.
He at least looks at you like,
you
talking to me?
Yep.
I don't think he knows he's a cat, because Kitty Kitty should actually instill some kind of interest, you would think.
Yeah. We think he's probably in the neighborhood of a year and a half, 2 years old. Don't know for sure, because they didn't know. You know, they said maybe when we have him checked at the vet, that they might be able to check by his dental work, I guess. But they didn't have any real certainty on age for this particular kitty. And anyway, the thing with the GSM coming into town should be interesting to see just what options are available once that's here, what kind of other providers. It's obviously a worldwide standard. that hasn't been terribly popular here, but there are a few companies using it, and they tend to be fairly innovative because of the world being innovative on it.
Each of the companies that has that particular thing has at least one advantage, one of them being rollover minutes, which I find extremely handy.
Yep.
And I don't know if there are any other really cool things about that company, but the fact that it has rollover minutes, especially if you're not one of these people that tend to use all your minutes every month,
right?
Seems to me that that is one of the other things. One of the companies is coming out with, I think it's Alltel, is coming out with a service. If you buy their X number of dollars, not their cheapest plan, fairly expensive plan, but you get free incoming minutes, and for that matter, outgoing minutes to 10 numbers of your choice.
Uh-huh.
Any 10 numbers. And they don't have to be cell phone numbers. They can be any 10 numbers.
This is almost sounding like the old days of landline. Where,
yep.
Oh, you
mm-hmm.
can, you know, most often, friends and family. And
yeah,
all
yep,
that
yep. kind of stuff. Yeah, they're starting to do similar things. And somebody, I don't remember who, and again, it wasn't cheap, but I seem to recall there were a couple of companies that had come out with some form of unlimited plan for cell phone use.
There are several of them that have unlimited minutes. And there are at least two or three that have unlimited incoming minutes.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
But I think there's at least one that has unlimited outgoing minutes
as
well.
I'm thinking I remember something about it. As I said, it's not cheap.
No.
But, you know, obviously it's a start, because it wasn't even there a couple of years ago.
That's true. And the difference in price per minute now compared to what it was a few years ago is very similar to what happened with long distance.
Mm-hmm.
In that...
one of the things that happened, of course, is that it went digital.
That's true.
As soon as the system went digital, they could put a lot more calls into the same bandwidth, and the price per minute went down a lot.
Mm-hmm. Because they don't need as much. They don't need as much real estate, so to speak.
That's right. I still think overall that it's too expensive. You know, that they really need to come up with ways to drop the price, and I think maybe competition over the years will eventually do that.
That would be good.
It should be interesting.
That would be very good. There's a kitty here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know, it was funny, because all of a sudden there was this kitty looking up kind of at me. Like, oh, well, I'm here. Has somebody missed me?
I think he really wondered if we missed him. I don't, I'm not
it's
sure
possible.
About that.
Who knows?
He certainly was cuddly up for a while there.
Mm-hmm.
And now he's back to just being, hi, I'm here. If you
mm-hmm.
really want to pet me, that's fine. But don't expect me to get all rubby or anything.
Right.
Hi, kitty. Now I got to go look around and see where everything is, because I didn't. I spent most of my time somewhere
that other
hiding.
Place. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm glad you came back.
Yeah.
Rub. He did rub me.
Mm-hmm. He's a cute kitty.
Yes, he is.
Not real heavy.
Uh-uh.
A little bigger than Abby.
Smaller, in my way of thinking, than Keeper was when we got him, when we sent him back home.
It's possible. I was thinking about the same size, maybe, but you could be right. He might be. I think he's lighter. But I'm not sure that he's physically smaller. I think Keeper may have been more muscular, more firm or whatever. But other than that, I think they might be similar sized. It's hard to tell.
As I say, there's very little white on the fella. He's
yep.
He's got just the tiniest bit of white under his chin.
Mm-hmm.
That's funny. Blair goes, he ain't heavy. He's my kitty.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's it.
Yeah.
If it wasn't so obvious, I would have named him Little Morris.
That's funny.
Or Morissette. No.
Hi. Hi.
There's radio, a satellite radio thing from Sirius that has the functions talking. What I don't know is that if it'll talk the channel numbers that it's on, or the channels that it's on. That would get interesting if it could do that.
Yeah, that would be interesting.
But a lot of the features of it, the buttons do talk, is again so that you can like use it on the road and not have to look at the screen. But that would seem to me a good reason to have the channels speak up as well if it can be done. I just don't know whether they've got enough of the info. It would seem to me that they would have the info, since it comes in digitally. It could be converted to something that could tell you. I just don't know if it does.
Yeah, I mean, if it comes in as text, well,
yeah, exactly.
Don't go there. Don't go there. Hello, kitty. You're the kitty. Well, you guys go ahead. I'm just going to pet the kitty for a while.
Yeah, right. Anyway, so we'll have to figure that out. I can't remember the model. I think it's like S50 or something like that.
S standing for Sirius, maybe.
Probably. And 50 standing for the fact that it'll record 50 hours of audio.
Uh-oh, don't go over there. Go see Tom.
Well, you've been doing a lot of that, huh? Don't go there, don't do this.
What's that?
He's been doing a lot of that the last few minutes. Don't go there, don't do this.
Yeah, right. Not sure what he's doing. I saw him for a second.
Well, he decided he didn't want to go oversee you, apparently.
Okay.
He was a little skittish toward you. I'm not quite sure why. Did you hurt him?
No.
Okay. Just thought I'd ask.
Because he certainly wasn't skittish when I picked him up earlier.
No, he was happy to see you, I think. Originally. He doesn't want to go there now. I was pointing him your way, and I think what he doesn't want to do is be told where he has to go.
Right. He doesn't want to do something you want him to do. He wants to do what he wants to do.
Right. I think that's basically it. He is a very, very...
independent kitty.
Independent little kitty.
Mm-hmm.
He says, I'm going to do what I feel like, and that's all there is to it. Yeah.
He probably really kind of gets confused. Well, I don't know what you're trying to have me do. You know, may not even be that he really cares that you're trying to do that, but he may not be able to figure out what it is you're trying to do. Might confuse him a little.
That's a possibility.
Oh, well. Now I see a little brown head moving around.
Oh, has he got a brown head now? He had an orange head.
Well,
really.
It's kind of orangey brown.
Okay.
I think it's kind of brownish rather than orange, but...
Okay. I kind of thought it was orange. Burnt orange, yeah, that's it.
Mm-hmm.
Butter's like, confuse a cat. Yeah, that's
there
it.
There you go.
Yes.
Well, good night.
Good old Monty Python bit.
Yes.
309-837-3400 if somebody would like to call in. We could take a call.
And do what with it? Oh.
Or we could just sit here quietly and let the people in the audience do the talking.
Mm-hmm.
We won't hear them, of course, but that's, you know, neither here nor there.
That's true.
It's somewhere else. Uh-oh, again?
No, I found it.
Answer that. That might be the phone.
Hi, baby.
big orange thing lights up.
Yeah. I think that's the other line, Tom. We're getting two calls at once.
Hello there. Yeah, we did. I can require. Probably. Let's see if I can put you on the air.
You're going to put him on with a...
two calls. You and somebody else. But anyway, you should be there.
Say something. You'll have to turn him up.
I did.
Okay.
Hello
there. Turn him up. Oh, that's got to turn in already.
Hello there.
Hello there.
How are you? It's very garbled.
It is.
Yes, it is.
Well, it is.
It's sounding very, very Cylon-like.
Oh no! Well, maybe
it sounds like.
Oh, I know why. Because I'm using the VoIP.
Ah.
And of course, you know, things are fine. On my end, we'll have news about that on Sunday. But I'm going through Chicago because my 312 calls go through Leanne's phone line, and Byron is in Chicago, so he's probably downloading the internet.
Yeah, that's right.
There you go. That's probably it. He's filling up. He is absorbing the entire amount of bandwidth that they have. Yes.
Yes, mm-hmm. I saw a doctor do that on a recent episode of Doctor Who. He downloaded the internet.
I still like those old commercials. They were funny.
Are you done?
What now?
Those commercials where he said, "Are you finished with the internet?"
Oh, okay. Well, we have a phone call. Rod, you're on the air.
I was just going to sort of chip in and add that I actually know somebody that downloads the internet, you know, for a living.
Oh, wow, cool.
Hi, the guy that runs the internet, well, not the guy, but the computers that run the Internet Archive.
Ah.
Well, that kind of makes sense.
Well, we have Blair on the line, too, so...
They really
well, I don't imagine it works too well with two calls. I can barely hear Rod, and if he's calling in, then... I suspect the content drought is over, so I'll get off here.
All right, well, we'll catch you later then.
Okay.
Bye-bye. There goes Blair. Did you disconnect him, Tom? Disconnect Blair. Ouch.
That was loud.
Ow, ow, ow. Turn down
that
the level.
That was loud.
Turn the level down. Okay. Okay. Rod, how are you?
So how's my audio?
Yes, can you hear me?
Yeah, no worries.
Okay.
I didn't mean to throw Blair off.
No, that's okay. Blair will find his way back. I know Blair.
So how are you? How have you guys been? It's been quite a while since we've talked.
Yes, it has.
Yeah, it has.
We've been doing pretty well.
I've been very busy with my transport stream analyzer software.
Cool.
And been working on a. High-end version of that for TV stations, which has been, you know, I'd like to say a lot of fun, but a lot of, you know, if you guys ever read a specification like the MPEG specs, you know, it is mind-numbingly boring, you know. It's horrible stuff, you know, thou shalt set the following bits, and you've got to read this and write code based on that, and so it's... So I'd like to say it's a lot of fun, but it's actually a lot of real drudge, horrible, boring work. But
well, the fun is when it's working and you're done. That's the fun, yeah.
Yeah, and you sit there and you can go look at a TV station and say, ha, that's what they're transmitting in XDS, you know, which very few people know.
So how is...
XDS, which is really weird. Now the V-chip, because that's all based on XDS.
Yes. How is it happening? Are we getting to the point now where most of the digital TV stations are up to a reasonable power levels so that most everybody can receive them?
No, not yet. The drop dead date, and I suspect it won't happen, is 2009, which is not a long way away, really.
True.
The STAs, the special temporary authorities. For the low power stations run out, I think, in July this year.
Ah.
So this year they have to get to full power, or they're in big trouble. And also, I think July this year, the sort of grade B or grade C public station, or maybe the grade B public stations or class B public stations, need to get switched over. This is stations like, you know, for example, you know, I live near Washington, D.C., so I get the PBS station out of D.C. I also get the PBS station out of Maryland.
Mm-hmm.
But there's another PBS station downtown at the Howard University called WHUT, Howard University TV, and they're a second-tier PBS affiliate.
Right.
And so they're up in UHF. Lovely, you know, very nice signal in UHF and analog. And they have their allocation. It's just that, you know, they have no funds, you know. This mm-hmm. is a minority college in D.C., and I suspect that they're having issues and funding issues getting on the air. So, you know, it'd be very interesting, actually, because, you know, I'm off on Monday to NAB. It'll be very interesting to see now that there is really a mandate for when digital TV is going to be it, to see whether any of these vendors have come up with a relatively sort of simple way of transitioning to digital TV.
Does it, I'm assuming, and maybe I'm wrong, but I'm assuming that an awful lot of the in-place transmitters would not be capable of producing the digital signal and transmitting it.
No, they can't. You have to throw away your transmitter.
That's what I thought.
Yeah, and of course, you know, if you relocate frequencies as well, you know, like for example, in Washington D.C., Channel 9 is CBS.
Mm-hmm.
And their digital carrier is on channel 34.
Okay.
So on their tower, they've got two tuned antennas, and they have running in parallel two transmitters, one doing analog, one doing digital.
Okay.
And you go around the country, and all of the people that are on air with digital have both right now.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so if you go to their plants, you know, I went to a Fox affiliate up in Pennsylvania, you know, because it was drivable for the day and I had an invite and, you know, let's go hang out and chat. And the guy took me up to the transmitter site, and the building, they had to put an extension onto it. And if you go look at one side, it's all of this really old analog gear. You know, it looks like it should be in the Twilight Zone. And then on the other side is sort of Star Trek The Next Generation version of transmitters with all this brand new Harris digital transmitter, you know.
Right.
This one massive grey tube that's outputting 45 kilowatts and a feed line off that, you know, a filter off that that looks bigger than my air conditioning ducts. And this is at channel 43, which is, what, 600 megs? Amazing stuff, you know. You know, you sort of, I don't want to stand too close to that, you know. that's 45 kilowatts out. Right, yeah, I don't want to stand anywhere near that. So, the other end of the RF spectrum, I got a KA band dish.
Ah.
I got, DirecTV has, or Hughes, actually, they got licenses for KA band with the idea of doing IP over satellite, and then kind of came to the conclusion, IP over satellite, there's like three or four people doing it, and it's not really a big market, right? It's not huge. So Hughes modified the license with the FCC, the idea was that they would have these satellites in orbit, and these satellites could receive from various, you know, spot beams and downlink on various spot beams, and there was IP switching going on in the satellite, right? So that if I was in Washington D.C. and I pinged a router in Atlanta, it would go up on my spot beam to the satellite. The satellite would know which spot beam Atlanta was on, and it would route the message itself. Right, so the satellite is a router, right?
Uh-huh.
And that's what they had the authorization for. And they changed it to bent pipe, which is what all the communication satellites are. Right? It receives a signal and retransmits it.
Mm-hmm.
With the idea of doing, with expanding the HD capabilities of DirecTV. And it just worked out that the Hughes had licenses for 103 West and 99 West, which of course is right next to 101 West, which is where DirecTV's main orbital location is.
Mm-hmm.
So with one dish, you can receive both locations.
And since they're different frequencies, they won't interfere.
Right, and so you can build an LNB that can do, you know, the way the DirecTV LNB works is that it's band stacked. Are you guys familiar with that, how that works?
No.
It's pretty spiffy, actually. Dish Network does the same thing. And so let's talk about Dish Network first, because theirs is really easy to understand. On a normal LNB, or an LNBF, the polarity being received is dependent on the voltage coming from the receiver.
Okay.
All right, so I think you've got 14 volts, you get vertical, 18 volts, you get horizontal. And the same logic applies for left-hand and right-hand circular polarity.
Right.
So the downlink bandwidth from the satellite is 500 megahertz, right? Because it's from 12.2 gigs to 12.7 gigs, right? So you've got 500 megs. So that on the coax is 950 to 1450, which is where, you know, all satellite gear has had its downlink frequency in the past. And so what they did with Dish Network is they came up with these things called Dish Pro LNBs. And what they do is they take one polarity, like left-hand circular, and they put it from 950 to 1450 on the coax, and they then take the other polarity and do a negative side injection from 1650 to 2150.
Okay, yeah, I have heard of this.
Right, so if you look on a spectrum analyzer, you see, instead of seeing 16 transponders, you see 32 transponders. Right, now the cool thing about that is that then it doesn't matter what voltage is being driven into the cable, because it's receiving both polarities simultaneously. And so therefore you can string the cable between receivers.
Ah.
You don't have to worry about switching polarity. And so anyway, what DirecTV did with theirs is that they said, okay, we're going to use voltage from the receiver to select the polarity, but we're going to stack the KA band on top of the KU band, so that on one of these DirecTV dishes you get 950 to 1450 is DirecTV in KU band, and 1450 to 2150 is their KA band signals, right?
Uh-huh.
Okay.
So anyway, I took this thing out, plugged spectrum analyzer into it, pointed up in the sky, and lo and behold, there was DirecTV in KU band, and stacked on top of that was DirecTV in KA band.
Ah.
And I was given a receiver as well, so I took the receiver and brought it in, and you know, put it into the satellite signal mode, and tuned around, and was able to get a lock, and got my oscilloscope out and looked at the data coming out of the KA band tuner that's built into this thing, and it was in serial format, which I just happened to have a little prototype USB interface for, so I was able to lash that up, fire up TS Reader, and look at the transport stream that's coming down that they're sending in KA band, and it's DVB. Actually, it's DVB-S2, which is this next generation version of DVB that's being used predominantly in Europe. And guess what? Every channel up there is scrambled. Like, all this bloody effort soldering wires into this receiver and operating it on a cardboard box upside down, you know, with the power supply exposed and sort of 10, you know, voltages that can kill you. And like, hoping to find BBC1 and it's bloody scrambled. All of the channels, everything is scrambled. It's all MPEG-4 ABC compression. It's local into local and some national channels. And that was from the 103 degree location, and I heard from a friend that 99 degrees, a satellite at 99 degrees, which is the spot beam one, is supposedly lit up. And I went to point the dish there the other day and walked up to the dish and noticed, a bird had laid a nest inside the mount of the dish.
Oops.
The way that they've designed this thing is it's perfect for birds to make nests in. You
know, yeah, we have a dish that's that way too. The pole has this little area at the top of the pole where they covered it up so it couldn't, so there wasn't anything able to be in there. But there's just a perfect place for birds to build a nest.
Right. Yeah, they have a little on this particular on the KA band dish. They have a little spirit level sort of built into the thing, and then they have these very, very fine adjustments that you're meant to make to peak the signal up.
Mm-hmm.
And in the manual, they're very insistent about peaking the signal up because they're worried about cross satellite interference from
cross pulse,
the Gibraltarian satellite that's going to go to 105.5 west in the broadcast band. So it's going to be right between DirecTV and Dish Network, operating on the same frequency. So it's basically going to not be 9 degree spacing anymore in the broadcast band. It's going to be 4.5 degree spacing.
Oh, for crying out loud!
And guess who has the authority on the satellite? It's not the FCC. It is the government of Gibraltar, which can't even see that orbital location.
What the heck is it doing there?
Yeah, why do they have that?
Well, you know, every sort of sovereign government was dulled up.
How about maybe dulling out the a satellite that actually they could look at? I mean, it seems to me that would make a lot more sense than putting one somewhere where they have no use for it whatsoever.
There is actually a reason for 105 degrees is because it's relatively conus, and from there you can cover the Caribbean, so therefore you can cover all the British colonies left in the Caribbean.
Oh, but they still have to feed a signal to it.
Huh?
They'll still have to feed a signal to it.
Yeah, but but you just fiber that across the Atlantic and then uplink it.
Yeah, I guess that's true.
So the bottom line is that, you know, like Tonga has, the island of Tonga, right? Think sort of palm trees and grass skirts.
Yeah.
You know, they have an orbital location and they lease it to the Chinese or the Thais or somebody like that.
Jeez.
You know, they needed more bandwidth. You know, you just can't go willy-nilly stick a satellite up. It's, you know, the orbital locations are all handled by the ITU. So, yeah,
yep.
So there's going to be satellites at 105 degrees. And the reason which they say, you know, use, you know, all these fine adjustments is that DirecTV is very worried that when something does come along at 105.5 degrees, it's going to cause them interference.
Well, it certainly is something to worry about, but it would seem to me that since you're talking KA band, which is a lot higher frequency, that
No, they're worried about 105.5 interfering with 101 KU.
Oh.
They're worried about KU interference.
Oh, okay.
That's a very good point, because you know, like if, for example, you've got a big reflector, like a C-band dish looking at KU band, you know, you'd sort of have to nudge it back and forth to get a really good signal, whereas on C-band, what the hell, you know, point it in that general direction, you're going to get good signal. And I would have thought that KA band was a lot more finicky than KU, and it's really not, well, you know, either that or DirecTV satellites the two DirecTV satellites are up there are operating with very, very strong outputs. You know, like these things are, you know, outputting quite a few kilowatts. Because it's easy, go point the KU stuff and it'd be amazed how strong it is. You know, it's really easy to line up. So I took the dish and had it and put it in KA band, and then swung it around the arc, you know, sort of manually going up and down, hunting across the arc, trying to find a signal. And I found the wild blue stuff on Anik F2,
Okay.
Which was kind of cool.
Now, what exactly, who is Wild Blue at this point?
It's a IP over satellite service, two-way.
Right.
All right, covers the U.S. and Canada.
And who's putting it out, or who are they?
It's, in Canada, the satellite's operated by Telesat. It's got something like 48 beams on it. I don't know if the switching's done on satellite or whether it's done at the ground. I think it's probably done at the ground. The U.S. service is sold by a company called Wild Blue, and in Canada it's sold by, I think, probably Bell.
Mm, okay.
And it's, basically DSL sort of style service via satellite, two-way over satellite done in Ka band.
Yep. Well, I know a friend of ours was talking about getting it, and I guess it sounds like it could be pretty interesting. I don't know how well it's going to work, but it sounds like they've got, reasonable throughput and stuff like that.
Yeah, you know, like all of these in and out over satellite applications, there's always the sort of light time lag, which,
yep,
makes it impractical for using things like Telnet. But most people surf the web,
Yeah.
And the whole thing's all based on DOCSIS, so which is the standard for doing IP access over cable, so just applied to a satellite.
I guess that would make sense. I know that there's some companies that are doing wireless using the DOCSIS cable modem boxes. So I guess it makes sense that they do it over satellite as well.
Right, yeah. I'm sure they've had to modify the standard slightly. And I had a look at the other satellite, Intelsat America's 8T, Telstar 8, what used to be called Telstar 8. And they have Ka band, but you can see there's a carrier there, but it was really, really weak. So I suspect that's really not being used. But there's not a lot of Ka band stuff up there, so, and nothing to watch. So don't run out and buy anything, buy a Ka band unless you're a DirecTV subscriber,
right?
Or want to do Wild Blue.
But it's interesting to be able to play with it.
Yeah,
talk
sure.
Talk about early adopter.
Nice to be able to say, well, that's another band ticked off.
Yeah, exactly.
I'd kind of like to have a look around X band, and have a dish that's got, full rotation on it. See if you can spot some of the NASA stuff.
Yeah, I was hearing that certain, that things were going to pop up on this X band stuff, and I can't quite figure out, what all they're going to put there, but I did hear something about, just in the last couple of days, of stuff showing up there.
A lot of that is from the MRO spacecraft, the Mars Reconnaissance Orbiter.
Okay.
That thing's got a absolutely killer communications link coming back this way. It's in the order of 6 megabits or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
In X-band. Think about that. 6 megabits. That's enough to do live MPEG-2 video.
True.
Right? from another planet.
Yes.
Wow.
Yipe.
Wonder what sort of a dish you'd need to hear that or see that.
Right. Quite. On the other hand, if it's 6 megs wide, they've got to have a lot of RF at the other end. They've got to have a very powerful TWTA on board the satellite. And they also have Ka band on it as well. And they're going to do some experiments. And the reason they put the Ka payload on there is to do sort of experiments to see how well Ka would do on the link. I haven't heard whether they've tested that yet. I think they might have to wait until they get into a circular orbit.
Now, X-band is what, 10 gigahertz approximately?
Further down than that. 7 gigs or something like that.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, 10 gigs and above is considered Ku band.
I guess that makes sense.
I'm sorry?
I say that makes sense when I think about it.
So what else is new at this end? I got new IP connectivity. We got Fios installed. You guys know about
that? Ooh, that's fiber, right? That's
yeah.
What is it?
Yeah, fiber. It's basically fiber IP access. So
you've got that to your house?
Yeah, about 6 months ago, the guys showed up with big orange spools and started digging up the grass area between the sidewalk and the road. And then about 2 months ago, I got an email saying, right, you can now get files. And so I called them up and talked to the business people so I could get a fixed IP address, which doubles the price, which really is kind of a bit sad. But on the other hand, this is half of the price of what I was paying for T1.
What speeds are you getting on the Fios?
30 megabits down and 5 megabits up.
Incredible.
I did an experiment the other day. Took some live video, put it through an MPEG-2 encoder, and then streamed it in UDP packets over to a cable modem user, and this guy had, I think he had a maximum of 6 megabits down, and the stream was about 4.3 megabits, for the video and audio. The whole thing is an MPEG-2 transport stream, so the kind of stream that one would find on satellite. And so I streamed it over to his IP using UDP, and this guy's in Calgary, Canada, right? And it was perfect. So I was able to do
that's neat.
SNG quality video through something that is less than well less than half a K a month.
That's cool.
Amazing.
Yes.
And I hear I heard from the tech that that Maryland is sort of the third market. The first two markets were LA and Dallas or somewhere like that. And they're in the process of, they've decided, right, well, we've got so much bandwidth going to them, at the curb. And even if we put loads of video on top of this, we're still underutilized. And so they've bumped the business people up to 50 megs down and 10 megs up.
Wow.
And I get it both ways. I go, I connect to my web server, which is on a shared machine up in New Jersey at a data center, and I upload files there, and it's 4.8 megabits up, and download files, and it's 29 megabits, 31 megabits down. This is just
I'm
incredible.
In.
It's certainly neat.
Yeah. If they come by laying cable, go for it.
Yeah
I was going to say, you said, oh, there was this guy with the orange spool digging up a yard. Some guy comes around here with an orange spool, he can dig up anything he wants,
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so, this worked out to be literally half what I was paying for a T1.
That's incredible.
Cool.
Yeah. And this thing is, downstream 30 versus 1.5 and upstream 5 versus 1.5.
Yeah. Yeah, I'd say you're getting more productivity through it.
There you go. Stack a bunch of sling boxes and a bunch of people can watch TV,
Actually, I had a friend connect to my sling box the other day. He's a cable modem user in, not Chicago. What am I thinking of? Wisconsin or somewhere like that, and he got connected into my sling box with this thing, and he was getting, I think, a megabit down from the sling box.
Cool. Mm-hmm. Yeah, Blair just got one. He has one at his place now.
They're very cool. Have you played with it?
No, certainly. Heard about them and read some of the information, but haven't actually used one. Would love to someday.
We used it in Australia. There was a family party last August in Australia, and so we thought, well, let's go on holiday there, because that way we can, August in Australia is sort of middle of winter, and so it's, the temperature's gorgeous, it's sort of 80 degrees up north and 60 degrees down south. Wait a minute, I've got that around the wrong way. Have I? Now, down south, it's... Six, you know how you sort of think about countries? And I just got them around the wrong way. So anyway, the weather there is beautiful because in Maryland it's really, really hot in summer. So we went to Australia. And we were really, really jet-lagged. And one of the options that they had was that you could get DSL access. It was, you know, $15 or something like that for 3 days. And so we took a laptop with us and had the Sling Player back air. And so we found that we woke up at 2 o'clock in the morning, right? You're completely wide awake. There's nothing to watch on TV. In Australia, they put test cards on at night. You know, they don't have full-time programming. You know, it's color bars or nothing on. You know, nothing being transmitted all night long.
Well, that's the way we used to be. You know.
So we used it to watch the Sling Box back in Maryland, and I must say the thing worked absolutely brilliantly, fantastic. You know, the thing's hooked up to a TiVo to a replay box. You know, same as TiVo. And so we're able to sort of sit there and put the thing full screen. And
no, not same as TiVo, better.
Better, sorry, much better.
And I assume you've got full control of the replay through the interface, right?
Yeah, of course, yes.
That is so great.
Yeah, it comes with that little infrared transmitter thing. Picture quality is kind of, you know. But, you know, make it full screen and then go stand some 10 feet away from a laptop. And, you know.
Well, I thought with all that bandwidth, you could have decent picture quality.
Well, the thing is, it's sort of capped out at a megabit or something like that, and also there was sort of bandwidth constraints on the other end. It was sort of hotel, DSL, you know. But I don't remember what the bandwidth was. Maybe sort of 300-400 kilobits or something like that.
Blair says it phones home every 5 minutes.
I'm sorry, it what?
Blair says it phones home every 5 minutes, the Sling Box.
Really?
Yeah, I guess he's been checking that out. And
that seems a bit... Well, I guess maybe it's registering its...
Guess is so they can find it, know how to get in touch with it.
Yeah, right, because each box has its finder ID number. And so you don't have to, you know, remember a particular, you know, you just...
Well, in his case, it's a good thing because he's on a cable modem that every once in a while does change its IP address, so...
Right.
You know, you wouldn't want to be stuck out, you know, away and not know your IP address anymore.
Yeah, I must say, it is very easy to connect up to, you know, if you sort of end up on some random PC that somebody allow you to install the player on, all you have to put in is your finder number and your password, and you're online, you know. Provided you've got the firewall routing set up at your end properly,
right?
It does a really good job of, no matter what PC you get, you do get connected to your Sling Box. It works. That works really well.
And on the viewing end, other than downloading the software, you don't really have to do a lot of configuring or firewall or any of that stuff.
On the download end, no. It's just on the upload end, you've got to set up a couple of TCP ports or something like that. You have to map through your router. I guess the negative part is that the download is pretty big. It's 68 megs for the whole thing.
Blair says that he has it blocked.
What's 68 megs if you got 30 down?
Well, there's that. Blair says he's got that blocked. It must still work if he's blocking the phone home thing. I don't know. Sounds like he's blocking it as firewall. By the way, Daryl, just a little over 6 minutes, so...
Okie dokie.
Just so you're ready, get ready.
That's always a good thing to remind me of.
The other couple of neat things that I sort of picked up recently, one was given to me, which is quite nice, is a box from a company called... what are they called? Autumn Wave or something like that. And there was a USB box that was made a couple of years ago. It was ATSC, so terrestrial digital TV to USB 2. Neat little box. Supported it in my software, and I must say it worked really well. It works really well. And they came out with this new version, which is really small. It's sort of a bit bigger than a mobile phone. And it's got a USB connection and an F connector on the back of it. And doesn't require an external power supply and comes with a little telescoping antenna. And it receives analog and digital TV. Which, of course, you can then play on your PC. So So I'm taking this thing to Vegas with me, along with a little telescopic antenna. It'll be very interesting to see what I can receive.
Yeah.
Very neat. And talking about actually what I'm taking with me to Vegas is I decided that I went over to the UK a few months ago, and while I was there, I took my, you know, took my laptop with me, which is my main development machine. I write all my software on a laptop. I've decided, you know, I want the, you know, if it can't be hooked up via USB 2, then, you know, I don't want to get involved in trying to make it, make something that, that requires PCI bus. So, so USB 2 or FireWire connection. So, my laptop's developed this problem where I'd, you know, at home it just sits running all the time. And I find that if it cooled down and I then turned it back on, it would beep at me and say fan hour and turn off. And so you had to keep turning it on and on and on and on and on to get the thing to fire back up again. Right, the fan actually sort of got warm enough to start spinning again. And so I thought, right, time for a new laptop. The, you know, the old one was sort of three and a half years old. Time for a new one. And so, now keep in mind I do Windows development exclusively. I decided to buy an Apple MacBook Pro. Have you heard about this boot camp thing?
Yes.
All right, so I basically got a MacBook Pro and put boot camp on it.
Cool.
And run XP all the time on it. I've got like a tiny OS X partition. And everything else runs on XP. And I must say, this is the most amazing laptop I've ever used, ever. This thing will play 1080i high definition in VLC, which uses no hardware acceleration at all, perfectly. Doesn't drop a frame, and it uses maybe a quarter of the CPU. This thing is stormingly fast. Really, really cool. I think that that new Intel... It's funny, because they don't call it a Pentium, but they call it a what, Intel Core Duo or something like that?
Hmm.
I guess it's the same as the Pentium D.
I honestly don't know.
Because if you go look at Apple's website, they say it's called the, you know, Intel Duo, Intel Core Duo.
Oh, okay.
So I guess that must be the same thing as a Pentium, as a dual core Pentium. Maybe it's a low power version or something like that. But anyway, very impressive, really, really cool laptop. But I must say, it gets really hot. It's not a laptop unless you sort of enjoy being burnt.
Yeah.
Quite amazing. And a great, really nice display on it as well. It's got a nice 16x10 display, so playing high, you know, quite cool. You can record high definition off air and play it back on the thing, and, you know, with a public domain player that's doing the interlacing, and it plays without dropping a frame. Absolutely incredible. Really, really nice. What else am I going to tell you guys?
How long are you going to be at the NAB? You're going to be there, the whole time, or pretty much?
I get there on... the full time is actually, it starts tomorrow. I know people that are going out tomorrow, because they have a lot of conferences on, you know, people that are members and committee members and stuff like that. So it actually, and also there's the exhibitors all have to do their setup and stuff like that. It opens to the public, you know, the exposition opens on Monday.
Okay.
So there's a lot of people going out tonight, and then sessions start on Saturday, and some more sessions are on Saturday and Sunday, and then really sort of Monday through Thursday is all about, you know, going on the floor and talking to people. But I don't know if you guys have been to, have you guys been to Las Vegas Convention Center?
Oh, yeah, because we were at the NAB in 2003.
Oh, you were? Okay, yeah. Yeah. Well, you know how big it is. It's massive.
Oh, yeah.
Wow.
Brian in the chat room says, Intel Core is a new platform umbrella intended to replace the Pentium M brand, and it is part of a major rebranding effort by Intel started back in January this year.
Okay.
Intel Core Dual consists of two cores. Two MIB L2 cache shared by both cores, and an arbiter bus that controls both L2 cache and the frontside FSB, I assume is frontside bus,
right,
access.
Right.
Upcoming steppings of core dual processors will also include the ability to disable one core to conserve power. So, and there's more, but we're out of time. So,
cool. Yeah, I must say they are incredibly fast, really, really quick.
Blair says he's been there as an exhibitor, and I've been there to help, not really as an exhibitor, but to help a little bit, because I drive stuff there one year. All right, well, hey, thank you for checking in with us, and if you get a chance, I know you're busy, but if you get a chance after NAB,